At this time, the chairperson should briefly qualify requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group. Saturday night speaker meeting, our 1 year of continuous sobriety. Have Central as your home group and attend a group conscious meeting. I'm Brian. I'm an alcoholic. As every week I said, my sobriety date's April 23rd, 1989. That's through God's grace, Alcoholics Anonymous, and a sponsor that still tells me the truth today. And I am forever grateful for that. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous and the life it's given me today. And it's amazing, you know, as my sponsor keeps reminding me, as even today, he goes, Brian, I don't care what you think or feel. What I care about is the action you're taking. And when I take the action, I get the results. I always feel better. And, you know, I would have never thought 23 years ago that I'd be sitting up here chairing a meeting and being absolutely nervous and being okay with it. You know, what happens is I show up and I participate, and then I let God take care of the outcome. So if you're new, welcome. This is a great life, and I've realized over the years that nobody comes to AA by mistake. And for that, I'm truly grateful. Thank you. All right. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and refrain from moving around or talking while a person is sharing. And to introduce our speaker, I've known this young lady for many years. And, you know, for me to watch people come in the rooms hopeless and then over time watch their lives change and what I call to see the smile in their eyes, to be happy, joyous, and free. And even when stuff, life is going on, they're staying sober no matter what. And, you know, that's to me the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this, I've heard her speak before, and she's got a great message, and she's all about the action and doing the work. So with that, let me introduce Kathy. Kathy.
Hi everybody, my name is Kathy, I'm an alcoholic. I'm nervous, but I'm not as nervous as I've been before, I guess. Let's see. I guess I'll just get started because, first I kind of wanted to say that that for a long time I just would refuse to say that I'm an alcoholic. I was getting taken to AA meetings, but when I thought about it, I wasn't an alcoholic. But then with some more exploration and some work with my sponsor, I definitely have a desire not to drink. And so, and the fact is that when I worked the 12 steps of AA with a sponsor, none of the things that happened to me before have happened since. And so I have no problem saying I'm an alcoholic today. And when I was thinking about what I was going to share, I thought, gee, I'm going to have to kind of pick and choose because there was so much action going on, you know, that I can't possibly fit it all in. Growing up, I was born in Kentucky, but my family moved to Gainesville when I was about 5 years old. I have an older sister and a younger sister. We're all about 3 years apart. And my mom and dad got married when they were really young. And I think my mom had my older sister when she was about 16. And They got divorced when I was about 6 years old. We lived in Gainesville. My dad was going to law school at UF. And I remember one of my very first memories is... Hold on. Is being in this king-size bed with my mom, my dad, my two sisters, and just feeling like I had it all. And then soon after that, when I was six, my parents got divorced. And my two sisters and I lived with my mom at first. And I don't remember like what I was thinking after that, but I just remember that that I was really angry. I was getting into fights. I was this little shrimp of a girl, and I was cursing people out and getting in trouble at school. And so then my mom could not handle having three kids. She was young and I don't know. So my older sister and I went and lived with my dad. And we lived in DeLand. That's where I grew up. And my dad had this series of marriages. So I had this series of stepmoms, none of which I liked. And one of them was a big churchgoer, big. And my dad didn't believe in God or church, never went to church. So I just remember that I would kind of use that against her. And so I did everything I could get away with to make her mad, and she did probably everything to try to get me in trouble. I don't know. But around that time, I had a friend whose family went to Baptist church every Sunday, and I was one of those kids that like practically lived at somebody else's house. So I was with them all the time, and I would go to church with them. And so when I was about 8 years old, at church, at the Baptist church, they said, if you just pray and ask God to come into your heart, that's what you need to do. So I went home one day, and I went in my bedroom, and I got down on my knees, and I prayed, God, please come into my heart, please come into my heart. And then, like, I waited for something to happen, and nothing happened at all. So I think that I concluded that either that's not real at all, or it's just not real for me, because I did just the way they told me. But I never talked to anybody about it. I never said, hey, I tried this thing, it didn't work. I just concluded either it's not real or it just doesn't work for me. Then, like I said, I have an older sister, so probably like many of you, my older sister was doing what teenagers do, and so she would invite me. I guess they probably think it's funny to get your little sister drunk or high or something, so that's what happened. And I spent that time, that was about 12 years old, I guess. And so I spent that time like tagging along with my older sister, and I would be in the back seat while she's driving with her friends, and I would be in the back seat with the cooler, and then she would get in trouble and I would get overlooked, and that's pretty much how that went. Then I started hanging out with this girl in junior high, and we decided to go on some shoplifting spree. And I was amazed that we didn't get caught. I can't tell you how much shoplifting we did. And we didn't get caught until finally it was that stepmother of mine who got me in trouble for that, because she noticed all these new clothes I was coming home with. And she wasn't buying anymore that I was borrowing it from my friend. So I was getting into fights in junior high. In high school, I ran away finally. I'd had it with my dad. My dad was like a strict kind of dad, and there was that stepmom there. And, you know, prior to that, probably about a year or two, my older sister ran away and lived with my mom. And so I ran away and lived with my mom too. And so my mom's house was, I can't tell you how opposite it was from my dad's house. At my mom's house, my mom and stepdad, it was, you know, they would come out of the bathroom, the smoke would come rolling down the hallway, and about this time, I was about 15, and let's see, my mom and stepdad were really a mess, and my stepdad was... Well, for my 15th birthday, I remember my mom got me a cooler full of beer. And my stepdad was always, you know, giving me stuff. And I don't know. That's just what it was like. If you can imagine what that's like, that's what it was like. So anyway, then then at that time I was trying to get my driver's license, and my mom had this friend, and this older man friend, so he let me, I was trying to get my driver's license, so I was always like dying to go driving somewhere. So I went with this guy and to pick up a punch bowl or something from his house. And there was an incident, and I remember calling my mom to come pick me up, and she just kept asking me why. And I just said, "You just gotta come pick me up. Come get me." And she didn't. And by then it was too late, so I went, as soon as I got home, I ran in the house, and I told my mom and stepdad what happened, and I fully expected them to call the police, and they didn't. The first thing they did was pour a glass of, I don't know what it was, brandy, something like that, and they said, "Here, drink this, you need to calm down." And they had that guy buy me a Camaro Z28. So so that's a
that's not the guy.
Is that funny? So anyway, that was how my parents handled that, and I just remember just kind of being in disbelief that they weren't going to take care of me, and instead of doing something constructive for myself, I just kind of said, "Well, guess that's what I'm worth, right?" So it's exciting in here tonight. Anyway, so I had a lot of those kind of incidents, and instead of going and telling anyone, I would always just use it as an excuse to go down. So that's what I did, and as a result, I remember graduating from high school, but I didn't go to my graduation because I think I had a bad reputation and I was too embarrassed to go. Okay, so then when I turned about 18, I had made some kind of conscious decision not to be like my mom and stepdad. I do remember my stepdad, he went to prison for a year, and he was drunk on all the holidays. We were constantly trying to rouse him out of his drunkenness to come do something fun with us. My mom was doing a lot of the same things. And I do remember having the thought about my stepdad, like, why is he's just come out of prison for a year and now he's drunk, so why would he do that again? Like, that didn't make sense to me at that time. I noticed that. And so anyway, when I was about 18, like I said, I made that decision I wasn't going to be like them. And I guess the way that I thought that I was going to accomplish that was that I was going to date like a good guy. If I could be with a good guy, then that was going to make me be a good girl. So I was dating this guy who was a good guy. But I was the worst girlfriend, because no matter how much I wanted to be honest and I wanted to be a good girlfriend, I mean, it was beyond me to do it. And so I hurt a lot of people's feelings in that time. I was drinking, and I remember one night in that time that I was out with some friends, some girlfriends. This is in South Florida. And we got so drunk that then when they went to bring me home, I couldn't remember where I lived. And I couldn't tell them how to get me home. And I called 911 and I said, "You've got to help me. I can't get home." Well, what's the problem, ma'am? Well, I can't get home. I can't remember where I live. Well, how are we supposed to help you? I don't know, but somebody's got to help me because I have to get home. So then, let's see what happened. Then I moved to Orlando in 1989, and I was working at this law firm, and I met this attorney there, and now he was like really good, right? If I could get that guy, then I would really be good. So I don't even know if I liked him or not. All I know is that if I could get him, then that was going to be good for me. So I did get him. I think my mentality was, I don't tell you anything that's true. There's no such thing as a friendship with a guy. I didn't even know what that was. And it was just all about getting him to like me. So whatever I thought he wanted me to say or what I thought would sound good, that's what I said. And so we ended up getting married in 1994, and we had two sons in 1995 and 97. And I just remember, there I was married now. When we got married, I was like, I am never going to cheat. I am, now that I'm married, I am going to be a good girl. So we had a nice house. I didn't have to work. I stayed home with my two little boys, and then all of a sudden, like, I don't know what, like, I just started getting depressed, but I couldn't figure out why. But I think it was because then I was at home with myself all the time. So all that stuff all those thoughts and whatever that I had been avoiding, they were just kind of like closing in on me. But I couldn't figure out what was wrong. So I'm going to have to like kind of wrap this part up. So what happened was, I was outside one day and talking to my next door neighbor, and the conversation quickly turned to drugs and drinking. So he said something about a particular alcohol, and I said, oh, I've done that before, but I would be afraid to do that because I could tell I would get in trouble with that stuff. So he said, well, I have some. So there I went. And as soon as I did it, I didn't feel depressed anymore. But the more that I did that with this next door neighbor, the more all those things that I said I wouldn't do, now that I'm married, that I really, really wanted to do, then slowly they just went to the side. Now, I'm sure that having an affair with anybody is, like, bad, but having it with your next-door neighbor presents its own set of problems. And there I was. One night, I used to say, when my husband got home, I would say, I'm going out. And he would say, okay, leave your phone on. And I would say, okay. And then I would turn off my phone and drive off. And then one day, he took the keys. And so I ran down the street. It was like this drama movie going on. And so I run and hide behind the 7-Eleven. And he pulls up in the minivan with the two little boys, right, with our little boys. And he sends the three-year-old up to me to say, Mommy, come get in the van. And I was like, no, honey, Mommy can't get in the van right now. You go back and you tell Daddy I can't come right now. But I just remember that Trey had like some sense of something, because he just kept saying, just get in the car, Mommy, come with us. And I would just kept saying no. So what became of that was then... so then I got taken to an addictions therapist, and who said, oh, evidently you have a problem. And I said, no, I don't. It's not a problem. And, okay, well, if you can't quit within a week, how about you agree to go to Betty Ford? Well, okay. So I remember sitting at my house just like clinging to the table, right, not to drink anymore. So A week later, I was in a plane to Betty Ford. And while I was there, you know, I don't know, I got a lot of self-knowledge. I learned a lot. We had family week. And that meant my husband was going to come and sit across in some chair in front of me in a circle, right? So one of the counselors came around and said, you know, put this rubber band on your wrist. It's to remind you that God's with you. So all week I was like twirling that rubber band. And then in family week, when I was sitting across from my husband, I don't know what happened. So, like a spiritual experience just like washed over me. And the only thing that I could hear was, everything is okay. That's all it was just a knowing that no matter what, everything is okay. So I consider that like my introduction to God. But it didn't keep me sober when I left Betty Ford. Because when I got home, there was that husband of mine, and now he was like paranoid about what I was doing, right? For good reason, probably. And he was bothering me so much that then I found myself going back to the convenience store like at 7 a.m. and buying a few beers. And then what happened next? Here's the series of events. I went back over to the neighbor's house one day. My husband found what was in my pocket. He said, you need to get out of here. And the feeling I had was like, oh, thank God, I don't have to deal with you anymore. It did not come into my mind that he was divorcing me, that he was going to take those kids away from me, or any of that. So all I knew was that I didn't have to think about him anymore. And so I went next door, because the guy was away for the weekend. I was looking out the window as the locksmith came and changed the locks. I got served with a summons to appear in court after that. The judge said, hey, you need to go to treatment. So I went to treatment. I was in there 3 months. I had a mediation scheduled. So my thought in the morning was, I don't want to think about this. So that equaled go to the store and get beer, right? So off I went to the store to get beer. And so after 3 months of being in that treatment center, then the girl that came and picked me up that day, I mean, imagine how I smelled when she picked me up. So I had to start all over in that treatment center. When I first got to that treatment center, I felt like I didn't know. I just felt like I didn't understand what was happening. You know, it felt like, I just wanted to die from being in there. And I really felt that way for a while when I was in there, until then slowly I would start, you know, doing stuff. And by the time I got out of there 10 months later, I felt like so close with God. But when I got out and I got my own little place, I was getting to see my sons. But then I thought, well, am I going to go to those meetings? Well, but nobody's making me go to those meetings. So I'm not going to those meetings. But like it says in that part in the book, like sensing I was being none too smart, right? I was like, yeah, but you know, you were doing pretty good while you were going to those meetings. Yeah, I know, but nobody's making me, so I'm not going. So then what happened? Then I started feeling lonely. Right? I was relying on God. Besides, I have this God thing going now that I never had this. And that's what's going to save me. But then I got lonely. So what do you think I did? Right? Called the guy, right? Then I went through a series of getting summoned back to court to issue orders terminating all contact with those boys of mine. Oh, I was at that treatment center with Katie, who's here. And that's funny. then that series of all that came, and then my conclusion was like, see, I tried the recovery thing. I tried the God thing. I'm getting order. I'm not allowed to see my kids. So now, like, screw it. Now I'm going to just go along with whatever comes. So you know what comes when we say that, right? Like, lots of stuff comes. Like, you know, bad news. So, let's see. So then I met this other guy, and he was, I think my goal was like to get the opposite of my husband, so, and he was the opposite, and he was like me. He drank and did what I like to do, so I thought that was good because then he couldn't complain about me. And then I came up with the bright idea that since I wasn't allowed to see my kids, that if I could have another child, then no one would be able to take this child. So, you know, there's something really wrong with having a child on the premise that I'm going to have this child so that no one can take this child away. And by this time, I can't think about Tranchon anymore. I just, like, now it's so painful that I don't even want to think about them. And if anybody mentions them, I get really mad, right? And so when I got together with this guy, somewhere in between there, I was at home one night, and I decided that I needed to, and I had been drinking, and I decided that I needed to drive to Dinky Dock up at Rollins and sit on the dock and figure out what was going on with my life. So I'm driving, I stop at the stoplight there facing Rollins, and the next thing I know, there's an officer standing at my window. I roll down my window, and he says, "You don't remember hitting the police car, Miss Shannon?" And I said, because then I know which one is the better answer. No, I don't remember, or yes, I do. So I said, well, I said, no, I don't remember. If I remembered, I would have stopped. So step out of the car, Miss Shannon. All those Bud Ice bottles come rolling up to the front, and so off I went. I got a special bonus. I got on house arrest with that ankle bracelet thing for 3 months for that, and that was weird, you know, getting that thing on. It was creepy, and actually that's when I met the guy. Is when I had that. So. Some other things that happened during that time is I had supervised visitation with my sons. After some time, we had to meet at an elementary school. You had to arrive separately, the custodial parents, the non-custodial parents. You were scanned for weapons by the police. I would always drink a couple beers before I went there because just to be able to endure that, that was a very degrading experience. But with a couple beers, I could manage to do it. Okay, so anyway, the rest of the story is just like nothing but worse, right? I started getting into more things. Caitlin is my daughter. She was asleep in her crib, and her dad was out, so I decided that was enough time that I could run and get something and make it back to the house. But I got stopped by the police, and they kept me there for so long because they knew what I was doing, but I wasn't going to tell them. And so finally, it got to the point where they said, "Put your hands behind your back. You're going." And I was like, "Oh shit, Caitlin's at home in her crib." And so I don't know why, but they let me go. They let me go. And I remember the thought I had was, well, it's too bad I can't come to this area anymore. So, but you know, I was back in that area before too long. And so let's see. Oh, yeah, at that time people were taking me to treatment centers, and I had discovered that I could leave and no one could do anything about it. right? So I went from being kind of compliant at the treatment centers to now, just like a few, I don't have to stay here. I do what I want. And I weighed probably like 90 pounds. I was stealing everything in sight. I went back to that next door neighbor's house one night and I stole one of those five gallon water bottles, like a Zephyr Hill water bottle, full of money. And there was a long time where, you know, those change machines at the grocery store where you put the change in and it gives you cash? Well, that was like a big trigger for me because, you know, for as long as that 5 gallon bottle of change lasted, I was in the grocery store shoving it in to get money. Then, let's see. I remember one time Caitlin's dad let me use his truck to go to a meeting. So I tried to find the meeting, but I couldn't find it. And I was driving down the road, and the idea came to me. Suddenly, the idea occurred to me that I had $5 in my pocket and that I was unaccounted for the next hour. So I thought I would go take a drive. And then myself, or whatever, said, Kathy, what are you thinking? You just got out of trouble. What are you doing? And I was like, and then the other side said, yeah, I know, for no reason, that's why. And I was like, well, okay, let's go then. So, you know, it was just nonstop. It was nonstop. I had a car, and I think I let somebody borrow that car, and I really don't know whatever happened to that car to this day. I decided to help my dad move one time and to be nice to him, but then when I went to pull the drawer out of his dresser, there were a bunch of credit cards, so I ended up stealing his credit card and putting about $900 on there. So then I didn't have anywhere to stay at this time, and a girl let me stay at her apartment that she had moved out of, and I was going to Publix. I was stealing like a sub sandwich and cigarettes from Publix. I was fully expecting to get arrested. I was writing like books of bad checks. I just knew I was going to get arrested, but oh well. And then one morning, and then I got summoned to court, and it was the same judge that I had been going to for my sons, but this time it was for my daughter. And I just thought, oh my God, there's no way I can go. But I can't not go. But I can't go. But I can't not go. Well, if I'm drunk, I can go. So I show up at the courthouse, and there was some things in my purse that when they put it through the scanner, I thought, I'm going to jail now. Right now, I'm going to jail. But they didn't see it or something. I don't know. But there I was showing up in front of Judge Kamansky again. And him going, Kathy, what are you doing? Don't you know that we want to help you, but you won't let us help you? So court ordered out of another house. Then then one morning, it just occurred to me, that moment of clarity, that this is all it's ever going to be. I'm not allowed to see any of my kids. I'm running out of ideas for stealing and getting money. I used to hang out in hotels and watch girls come in. And I used to tell them, you don't have to do that. You don't have to do that. But now I was considering doing that. I don't know. I just knew. I'm either going to Central on that Sunday morning, or I'm going. So I showed up here at Central. I don't even remember how I got here. And after the meeting, the chairperson, this girl, points at me and said, or I raised my hand or something. She said, oh, Kathy? And I was like, oh, how does that girl know my name? So after the meeting, she comes up and she says, do you remember me? And I said, no. And she kept saying it. She kept on to the point where I thought, I must have stolen something from her. And if she doesn't tell me who she is in a second, I'm going to punch her as hard as I can right in the face. So anyway, as it turns out, she was the judge's assistant that I had just been in before. I mean, how long was that? Like a week and a half or something. And so all of a sudden, it was as though, and this is probably about 7 years from the time that my husband sent me to that addictions therapist to now here I am. So it seemed to me all of a sudden that like the judge was standing in front of me, like my kids were standing in front of me, like just everything that I had been drinking to oblivion not to think about was just standing in front of me right at that moment. And I just busted out crying. I cried, and I guess she didn't know what to do because she just kept on talking. So basically she said, "Kathy, I've read your whole file. I know everything about you. I've been right where you are, and I can help you if you'll let me." And for the first time, because I think a lot of my drinking was like, "God damn, I want somebody to acknowledge how I'm feeling." Because I've tried to do what you say and not drink. But when I would try to do that, then I would just cry all day and I couldn't get out of bed. But when I would drink 2 beers in the morning, then I would get up and go to work and I would like maybe sing a song to the radio on the way. And I was wondering why was somebody trying to take that away from me? Because now I can do what you're telling me to do, kind of, right? But before, without it, I couldn't. And so there was my sponsor, and all she asked of me was to meet with her once a week. Just meet with me once a week. We're going to do step work together. And so I didn't have anywhere to live. I stayed at the Salvation Army down the street. I would come running up here at like 5:30 in the morning, like in a crisis mode, right? And I would come hang out here all day. And I would meet with that sponsor once a week. I was taking the bus everywhere. Then somebody got me a job just like driving cars back and forth from dealerships to this shop. And I didn't know how I was making it. I just didn't know. But I just knew, like, just keep going. Just keep moving. Keep hanging out at Central. When I would be driving those cars, I would just, like, have this... The anxiety was so much. It was overwhelming. I would just start crying, like, I... Just from the relief of realizing that I wasn't doing what I had been doing. Today, I wasn't doing what I had been doing yesterday. And, I would go into like a store like Walmart and I would have to leave because it was just overwhelming anxiety. And I was, then I had to leave Salvation Army. So the idea was to go stay at Wayne Dench, but I didn't want to go stay at Wayne Dench because I'd been hanging out down the street from there. And, my sponsor said, "Well, I guess that's just your reality." So I went and stayed there, and it was okay. I went to the greenhouse all the time, and I rode my bike to that job, and I would just, all I would do the entire time was just pray to God. I didn't know how I was going to make it. I was going to tell a story about my one time there was a cat that got in through the window in my house, and my stepdad chased this cat all over the house with a broom. Right? The cat ran room to room, corner to corner. My stepdad chased that cat and knocked it out with the broom a couple times. Finally, the cat, like, laid down in the middle of the living room floor. Like, I don't know, do whatever you want to me, I guess, because I can't run anymore. And that's exactly how I was when I got here. It wasn't by virtue, really, that I came in. You know, and at some point, I thought, I know what's wrong with me. I need to have the desire to stop drinking instead of everybody putting me into recovery. I need to want to come to recovery. So that's what I did. Like, relapse with a revenge, right? And I just, so I was in a very surrendered state when I came here. And then I just worked the steps. Every single step had like this tremendous effect on me. I was like shocked and surprised at how it was working on me. And let's see. Since I don't have time to like say it all, then like step one I just described, right? Step two, I came to believe that there had to be something, some power greater than me, because I didn't even know what was going to happen to me. Something had to become of me, I guess. So, and then step three, where it says, made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God. I think because I had had a relationship with God before, and I think some because I'm a parent and I know how much I love my kids, like that's kind of how I thought of it. If I turn my will and my life over to the care of this whatever, then it's going to take care of me, right? And so, and when I worked step four, I kind of thought of it when I was writing it like a science experiment, right? When I first went to write the names on the resentments, like I didn't have any, I had like three or something, and my sponsor just kind of laughed and said, all right, go back. But I think I felt like so elated just not to be doing what I had been doing or something, that there was like a temporary feeling of, I'm not mad at anybody. But when I reached back and went back through, then, you know, I came up with plenty. And I went through that fourth step just as fearless as I could, as kind of objective as I could. And and when I did my fifth step with her, I don't remember feeling an immediate relief. I remember feeling like I was exposed at first, like, what's going to happen now? It's all out there. And nothing happened except that I felt better. I got a job that somebody in recovery had gotten me this job, so I had a good job. I was riding that bike of mine all over town. There was nowhere I couldn't ride. And as much as I enjoy my car today, I wouldn't wish to be riding just a bike all over town, but I can see what I got from that. I got a lot of time with God. I got a lot of inner strength. And, you know, it was really good for me. So I love it when I see bikes here at Central. And when you get a bike and you can put it on the bus, there's no excuses for not being able to get anywhere, right? And let's see, steps 8 and 9. When I had to make amends to that now ex-husband of mine, oh my God, right? But I had written it out really carefully with my sponsor, and when I met my ex-husband up there at Einstein's, and I said what I was supposed to say, and it was just coming out. I remember having the thought, like, who is saying this? I can't remember. I can't believe I'm saying, like, everything on that sheet that we wrote. And he was, you know, as gracious as he could be about it. And then with my dad, I had lots of troubles with my dad, but when I made this ninth step amends to my dad, I don't know quite how it happened, but like I just remember my dad like hugging me up and just kind of rocking me. And ever since then, I have this great relationship with my dad. Like I just adore him, even though he's the way that he's always been pretty much. But I don't know, I have a new appreciation for him, especially that I'm a parent and I made lots of mistakes. So I have a real compassion for him. And I had lots of stealing amends. I was stealing from everyone, so I had lots of those kinds of amends to make. Steps 10 and 11, that combination of self-examination with prayer meditation, it just makes the difference between like hearing people say there's a God and feeling it, and just feeling it. feeling the effect that it has, watching myself be able to do things that I had been trying to do forever and I couldn't do it, but now I was shocked and surprised that I was doing some things. Step 12, there was a time when I was so excited after I worked the steps, I was running around trying to work the steps with some people. But I kind of like that because I can tell that I was just so psyched about the step work because I watched how it changed me. Now, I know when Brian started chairing this meeting for this month that he said that he was trying to pick some people. Where'd he go? That had some things happen during recovery, you know. So I was trying to think of some things that have happened to me since I've been sober, which is about 7.5 years now, since December of 2004. That's when I got sober. And I do remember that after being sober about a year, and now I was allowed to see my kids, and I had the job, and I had a place to live. I do remember, like, the old tapes start coming back. Like, hey, you really want to keep doing this? Because, you know, this is our cue. This is where we go. And I was like, yeah, okay. But really having to make that decision. Like, I feel like I had to really surrender all over again. Like, am I really going to do it? Am I? Because I've never really done it before. And thank God, you know, I, like, was willing to surrender all over again. And I know that there were some things that would happen that were hurtful, or they were just like the same things that had been happening, that every time things like that would happen, having to do with my kids and stuff, that I would go out. And somebody said to me, yeah, but do you really want to drink, or do you just not want to feel the way you're feeling right now? Because there's a difference between those two. And I never knew there was a difference between those. If I don't want to feel this way, that means I go drink. But I never knew that relief was available the same way. So that's been a big thing that I've learned. I remember I went scuba diving. I went on this cruise and I went scuba diving. So I had already been certified in scuba, but when I went to take the refresher course, I was so terrified. It's like, because I felt scared about this one thing, like all that fear that I had been feeling while I was out there was just came rushing in. But I worked through that, and I went on this cruise. I went scuba diving. I had this fabulous time sober. And then at some point, my daughter's dad, well, as it turns out, like, Caitlin had came to live with me, but then I was moving and her dad said, hey, she needs to come stay with me. And I didn't have any way to stop him from doing that. So that's something that I've been through in recovery. And he ended up bringing her back after about a month. Well, it's getting close to the time. But of course, there are, just like I can't tell everything that happened with the alcoholism, I don't have time to say everything that's happened since I've gotten sober. But all I know is that when I work the steps, I have none of the things that kept me drinking have happened to me. All that has happened to me is that every time I take that secondary position, you know, you are the employer, I am the employee, you're the director, I'm the agent, you tell me what to do, and I can't believe that I'm going to do it, but I'm going to. And since I've been doing that, instead of, like, feeling like nobody cares about me and that I'm no good, the only thing that I feel is, like, I'm super cared for, you know? That I'm just like as good as anybody else. I'm equal to everybody else, no more and no less. When I have a problem, I work the steps on it. That works for me. And I think I'll let that be it. Thank you, guys.